Welcome to the Local Foods, Local Places radio show, where we are highlighting voices working to restore the relationship that people have historically had with the seed, the soil, the farmer, and the plate. We are hosted by KRZA Community Radio, 88.7 FM, or streaming live at krza.org, connecting cultures along the Upper Rio Grande. So I am really happy today to have Adelina Lucero on our show, coming to us from Taos, New Mexico. Adelina is a mother, a grandmother, a traditional farmer and educator, and most recently became the Rio Grande Farm Park Program Director here in Alamosa, and she'll be moving up the river to Alamosa in October as a new community member. So Adelina, thank you for taking time to be on this radio show.
Thank you so much, Liza, for having me.
Absolutely. So good morning, and tell us a little bit about yourself, where you come from, and what your relationship to Taos is.
I'm actually from Taos Pueblo, so I'm a tribal member from Taos Pueblo, and I partially grown up here, and I've returned and working on farming and community food systems, food sovereignty, and just trying to work with community for the last 11 years in these areas, as well as Indigenous education curricula.
Wonderful. And just tell us a little bit about who you are and those kinds of things.
Okay, awesome. Well, I'm a mama. I have three children. I have one grandchild, and I am a traditional farmer, meaning that I'm pretty much mostly growing traditional crops of blue corn, red beans, squash from Taos Pueblo. And I also grow other things that, you know, will sustain my family, like, you know, kale and sweet corn, you know, fun crops like that are really good for us. And I've worked in Indigenous education for the last 16 years, actually 18, sorry about that, 18 years now. And so I just have a passion for working with community. So a lot of the goals that I have are to just kind of further community food systems and make connections where I can in those capacities as a farmer, as a mother, and now as the program director for the Rio Grande Farm Park.
Wonderful. And you're also a business owner, is that correct?
Yes, I am. I'm a small business owner for Dancing Butterfly Naturals. And that is a natural care products that I make myself using mostly Indigenous ingredients that I harvest, that I grow and process myself in making my own oils. I make a beautiful yucca shampoo, goat's milk soaps. I make juniper berry oils and wild rose oil, lavender. So various products of, you know, just to kind of make you feel good. Loving yourself from the inside out is my motto. So taking care of yourself from the inside out, anything that you're taking into your body, you know, should reflect on the outside. And so that's kind of my goal, is to also bring, you know, all these belief systems and working with my environment rather than against it, you know, over harvesting, those sort of things, and using harmful chemicals. I don't have those in my products. I tend to use BPA-free bottles and recycled packaging.
Nice. And how did it get its name?
My name is, my Tiwa name is Til Moa Tome, and translated, that would be Dancing Butterfly. And my products are natural, so just kind of put it together like that.
Beautiful. So if a listener wanted to check it out, how could they access your products?
So it would be www.dancingbutterflynaturals.com. That's the website. You can also check out my Facebook and Instagram. Just Google Dancing Butterfly Naturals, and it should come right up.
Nice. So tell us, how were you introduced to agriculture?
I come from a long history of farming and agriculture in my community, as well as my family. We strayed away from it for a while when we moved to California back in 79. My mom continued to grow, and she loved plants. We always had plants in our home. I remember that growing up. And she would gift those to friends from cuttings or things that she grew from seed, small little plants. And when I moved back to Taos, Pueblo, I was putting my son through his traditional time, and I had to learn how to grow. And my mom gifted me seeds, and I was able to use land that family had, and a friend at the time. Learning our traditional ways of farming was just a beautiful experience, and I started that process back in 2010. So coming back to it was wonderful, learning how to not only grow the plant, take care of it. I'm using traditional methods of watering and irrigation, but also learning how to save the seeds and how to really dry the plant and store it for use throughout the years.
And you are kind of known for growing beautiful blue corn. Can you talk about that a little bit, that product and what it means to you and what you do with it and such?
Absolutely. I just, the very first time I put that seed in the ground, I had a connection with it. It grew beautifully. It hadn't been grown. The seed that I was gifted from my mom hadn't grown in Taos Pueblo on these lands for a little over 40 years. So when we put that seed in the ground, boy, it was home, you know? And that connection for me was tremendous. And I didn't realize it at the time, but as I came up, I was living in Albuquerque at the time, attending UNM. I would come home on the weekends and as often as possible to irrigate and just be there with my energy. And it gave me a lot of energy. And that corn taught me, you know, what it wanted, when it needed it, when it needed water. You know, the leaves would fold up and they would kind of ripple. And when it was happy, you know, you could see it dancing in the wind. And when it was ready to, you know, harvest the corn pollen, it let me know. And I felt like I had almost talks with it. I would be frustrated sometimes. I could leave those talks there and I would feel better. It gave me a lot of good energy. And over time, you know, when I finally got to harvest this and went through the process of learning that I could peel back, you know, the corn and reveal such beautiful, you know, corn, and realized that I was going to braid this and I was going to tie it, and just developing this reverence for this corn. I likened that to my children and the connection I had with my children in raising them and you know, breastfeeding them and watching them grow and watching these little milestones. That's how I felt with that corn. And I felt such love and, like I said, reverence for it and finding ways to, you know, like hang it up and dry it, utilize it in the foods that I was creating and making for my son during this time, and then eventually my family for the years after, and wanting to share this with people, sharing seed, making blue corn atole, blue corn flour. It's just been such a beautiful process and connection that I've made with this corn. And I have a tattoo on my hand of my blue corn because I love it so much. It means so much to me. And this is why probably I have people know that I have such reverence for my blue corn.
Mm. So why were you attracted to the Rio Grande Farm Park?
Literally, you guys are doing everything that I am passionate about. I'm passionate about community. I'm passionate about food sovereignty. I'm passionate about the connections to plants and health and wellness within ourselves as well as our community. And you're including the entire valley, which is huge. I think that that's tremendous. The education components that are available and that are happening and that we're planning for now are just wonderful opportunities. The fact that there's a food hub, and I love that there is equity. You know, that's available. Racial equity. We were going to talk a little bit about that. Really seeing that this is not just, you know, one particular group of people that's growing, that we're looking outward and inward, and we're being very inclusive. So I appreciate that. And so when I heard about this opening, I just beamed. I said, this is pretty much everything that I'm passionate about and that I have experience in, and I want to share that experience, and I also want to learn and I want to grow, and just the opportunities were there.
Nice. And what do you, could you maybe describe what you feel you bring to the project, how you can complement the project, how you know, kind of what you might see? I know you've just been there a short time, but maybe some of your hopes around the project that are maybe just forming.
Absolutely. Well, I believe as I've stepped in there and I've seen what's available and I've met the staff and got introductions to some of the projects and programs that are going on, I would say that being a Native woman, a Pueblo woman, that is within the same, you know, area, growing up in this area as a Pueblo farmer as well, and as somebody who's worked in farming through Red Willow Farm, and having connections with the wider community outside of Taos, I would say that this is something, having those experiences is something that I believe that I can bring. As well as a small business owner, I do see the opportunities for economic development that are happening now and that could grow. I think on a national level, some of the programs that are functioning there now, I have a pretty clear understanding for working with national programs and how they affect, you know, the local community, affect us at the local level. So I believe that's something that I bring as well. And just really the connection to these lands. And I believe it's innate, you know, it's within me. And even though we're just an hour and 45 minutes away, and we're still sharing, you know, a lot of the same lands and you know, spiritual connections here. So I say that's something I bring. And in terms of goals that I have and ideas, I think really they're happening now. And I would just love to carry on in the spirit of how things have been growing, but bringing the perspective that I have within me as an individual and as a Native woman, as a woman of color. And I think everything that's happening right now is just great. And I think furthering those visions and having an opportunity to work a little bit more closely with the farmers and the farming families and getting to know the community is just going to be tremendous in terms of meeting the mission and some of the vision that I've been introduced to so far.
Yeah, I really enjoyed walking the land with you and learning that a plant that grows everywhere here was actually an edible that can be cooked, the salsify that you call a goat beard. And it was just really enjoyable to have you walk and just share your plant knowledge. And you also, you know, bring a wonderful nonprofit background with Red Willow Farm, right? Red Willow Farm was a nonprofit and you helped run that.
Yes, it's actually, the nonprofit is Red Willow Center, but it's known as Red Willow Farm. Most I think it's I worked there for 4.5 years and 5 years, 4.5 years in the capacity as the executive director. And just being able to have that introduction into the nonprofit world was scary, exciting, but it opened up a lot of doors in terms of resources and really connections. I say I've made a lot of connections along the way for people who have like-minded individuals and like-minded organizations and communities, and really understanding truly how in this together we are really understanding the impacts that we're facing as a world, as a nation, and going all the way into, you know, all the way bringing it back full circle to ourselves as individuals and understanding what those responsibilities are, but that we're also not alone, that we can reach out. And in the age of, you know, Zoom meetings and, social media and those sort of things, I love that I'm part of a lot of these same connections and talking to people. We were sharing something from Rowan White today, that beautiful poem that you sent. I mean, the thought that she shared at one point, just really being able to have a connection like hers, or maybe like Linda Black Elk, who is sharing recipes and information about how to take care of ourselves in the times of COVID, with what we have around us, with elderberry and looking at the medicines that we have that a lot of us have strayed away from, you know, in big pharma and you know, Western medicine and things like that. So having those connections and understanding that we could just reach out and utilize these connections and share across the internet or, you know, a phone call, and then bring that back to our communities and broaden that out, you know, that sharing method.
Wonderful. So let's talk, you know, speaking of Rowan White, let's talk about seeds and seed saving. This is a perfect time to talk about this. The time is ripe for saving seeds, and you are a seed saver.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is the time of year. I mean, I think a lot of times throughout the year, depending on the plant, you know, you can gather seed and save it. And it's just about, I do get a lot of questions from people asking me, you know, when is a good time to save seed? What do we do with the seed? You know, how do we dry it? How do we store it? So really having those considerations, not every plant is the same. So I would say, like with blue corn, when I'm ready to harvest, you know, I make sure I'm processing the entire plant the way I utilize it. I use the corn husks. I separate the majority of the corn husks and save them. And then I braid the corn and I dry it. And I usually leave it out. I have an area where I dry it here at home. I know people at the Pueblo who will put it between like drying racks, which are essentially just like screens, and then they cover them so that the birds aren't getting to them, but the air is still getting in there and drying. And once they're dry, you know, you want to shuck them, and then you definitely want to, I don't know what the process is called. I think it's almost like winnowing wheat, but you want to winnow like a lot of the stuff that comes off dried from the cob. And you get that out, because once you store it, you don't want to, when you store it that way, it's going to probably produce bugs or encourage bugs to eat your corn, and you don't want to do that. So those are some of the methods I like to use for corn. For beans, you know, if I'm not cooking them fresh, I like to peel them out, again, dry them, make sure they're really dry, and I put them in pottery, sometimes glass jars, and make sure they're dry, sealed, and stored in a cool area. So I do that with every single plant that I plan to save seed from. I have a tomato or a chile here, you know, that I'm cooking home. I'm making salsa or something. You know, I make sure that I get the seeds out, and I wash them, I dry them, again, make sure they're stored somewhere dry and clean and in a cool space, you know.
And what does seed saving mean to you? Why do you do it, and why is it important?
Because seed saving is extremely important, I believe, to... for our future generations. You know, I was talking a while back when we were with my family, and we were talking about the amount of potatoes, you know, that I was growing, and really what that looks like for tubers. And I kept thinking, well, we need to save some of these tubers, and how do we do that? You know, so I was explaining to them how I do it. And then I thought about the seeds, and I started mentioning, you know, and asking, are they going to come out harvest, and would they want some of the seed, or do they want to entrust that with me and continue, you know, that process? Because up till now, I've been the only seed saver in my family since my mom. So I have a huge responsibility in that way, but saving seed is important because future generations need them. They need to understand the varieties that we have. They need to have access to those varieties. Not every year is a good farming year. That's another huge consideration. This year has been really funky in terms of the weather being too cold to plant early, too hot. And I noticed this year a lot of my plants are stunted. So I'm not sure that I'm going to save seed from some of the plant that I grew that are stunted, because I don't know how viable they're going to be. So I constantly think in a process, and this is something that comes from my community. You know, I think 7 years ahead. I cycle my corn seeds, for example, within 7 years. So I just planted 2 years ago seeds that I had from 7 years ago, you know, from the 7 year plant, and I move them and I rotate them that way. And I try to save a little bit from each one. I'm making sure that I'm labeling them. I also have a huge calendar that I like to record weather patterns and things like that, because this is all related to your seeds. How early you're planting, how much water was available, how often did you irrigate? Just little notes like that when I'm in the field are extremely important. And I noticed the difference now that I've been planting continuously for 11 years. I've noticed coming back to those seeds that they're telling a story. Seeds that I planted 7 years ago, they're having a little bit harder time, and also that's because of the weather patterns, the water availability, but they're also just not as viable as seeds that I had, you know, initially. And I think that's because of the effect that we're having with the change in our weather patterns. So it's extremely important that we understand those cycles, and that we understand how quickly a plant can go out of rotation just in a 7 year span.
What is your philosophy on growing food and sharing the harvest and that kind of thing?
I didn't hear the initial part of the question, Liza. I'm so sorry.
No. So, what is your philosophy on growing food and community?
My philosophy, I think you said it in part of the question, is just having enough to share, having enough to save for future plantings. And around that would be celebration and having conversations, sometimes not directly related, but just having that time for laughter and sharing, because when you're farming, you don't have a lot of time to spend with people. You have a lot of other considerations outside of really visiting and those kind of things. So when I plant food, I plan to harvest, and I love to have like a harvest feast. That's always just like a great thing to do. And then sharing some of that food as it's fresh, and sharing some of it as the year goes throughout to where it's been, you know, saved and we're running really low. We're coming into almost into spring, for instance, and then we can relive some of those good memories and then share new ones together. So for me, it's always about sharing. It's always about that love and that laughter, and then talking about the next year's planting season as that time comes by. So,
yeah, I think these COVID times are some of the hardest times because some of the, you know, the best part of life is gathering around a table and telling the stories of the food and telling stories of all kinds, and it's just a hard time right now for community. I feel people maybe are doing that in their nuclear families, but they're not really able to do that with their greater community like they did.
Yeah, absolutely. So September 29th, I mean, I don't know if it's the 29th. I think it's the 28th or 29th. We have our feast every year here at the Pueblo, San Geronimo Feast. And as long as I've been alive, this is the first time I know that this isn't happening. So COVID's truly affected us, and truly affected us on this level as Pueblo people. I've talked to a lot of my friends how we're not gathering. It's disrupted the way we keep our culture together and how we connect during these times. And it's always surrounded about food, whether it's a birth, whether it's a death, whether it's a marriage, whether it's a feast time. Our dances have been disrupted. And these are our life cycles, our pathways, our lifeways and our pathways to how we connect and keep our culture and how we keep our food system rolling. So it's been really disrupted. And I think it's a good thing that we've been safe. But I think it's also given us a lot of time for pause. I was talking to my niece last night, and we were discussing this, and how grateful we're going to be next year when we're able to get together, and we're going to come in and we're going to really look at the teachings that we've had and we've heard all our lives to go, wow, this is what they were talking about, that we really have to get out there and give thanks, and we need to dance, and we need to use our water and use those plants that are gifted to us, and the seed that's there, put it in the ground. I've noticed a big upswing of planting within my community and in general of people. Even if you're living in the city, urban, you know, you're planting, you know, something that you're going to eat because it's not readily available at the store, and people panicked a little bit, but it's a learning process. But just really, I think it's given us that time to pause and really realize how grateful we are for what we have and how we're going to celebrate that when we can come back together.
I agree. Those are beautiful words. So we're at the end of our interview. We have about a minute left. I'm not going to try and ask you about racial equity in 1 minute. But is there anything that we haven't talked about or about yourself you'd like to share before we close this interview?
I would just like to say that, you know, this is a great time as a community, within the San Luis Valley, within Taos, and as individuals and families, to just really think about how we want to proceed for our futures, you know, in terms of food and food security and what that looks like. Because it, as we've all noticed, that this can end pretty abruptly with a snowstorm, you know, the those connections with the food trucks and things like that can cut off. We can, you know, with the weather patterns being the way they are, you know, the water may not be available, the seeds can go away. So just really start to consider what maybe food sovereignty looks like for us on those levels. And I think being grateful that we're all here and that we're safe is another thought that I have right now at this moment.
Well, thank you, Adelina. It's been a joy talking to you. And we have been listening to Adelina Lucero, mother, grandmother, traditional farmer, and educator, and now the program director at the Rio Grande Farm Park. Thank you for tuning in.